for over 15 years. Gold was $300 per ounce when I started buying. Today, it's over $1,200. But now I found a better way to buy gold. All those other firms are selling gold bullion. It's not rare. It's not proven. And they have a huge markup because they've commissioned salesmen. I have found the Uber of gold. This company, pre1933.com, will forever change the way gold is sold. Pre1933.com is a wholesaler of pre-1933 gold. They have no salesmen, zero commission prices no one can compete with. All conservatives understand the hole America's in. We owe $20 trillion in debt. We all know gold is the answer. It's our insurance policy. But now you can buy your gold wholesale, just like dealers, without commission salesmen involved. Call 855-PRE-1933. That's toll-free, 855-773-1933, or go to pre1933.com. You'll never buy gold from anyone else ever again.
Fewer people asking for unemployment help last week, as the Labor Department has released numbers this morning showing jobless claims down by 2,000 to 236,000. Analysts expected the claims would rise to 245,000. The number of people continuing to receive benefits is at its lowest level since November of 1988. The new acting FBI director, Andrew McCabe, is on Capitol Hill testifying at a Senate hearing at this hour in place of James Comey.
Comey was originally scheduled to appear at the hearing of the Senate Intelligence Committee. CIA Chief Mike Pompeo, National Intelligence Director Dan Coats, and NSA Chief Mike Rogers will also testify. Meantime, the Intel panel has invited Comey to testify on Tuesday of next week.
That's Mark Mayfield. Since March, electronic devices other than cell phones have been banned in airline flights from 10 Middle Eastern and North African countries headed for the U.S. because of ISIS threats of bombs and such devices. Now that ban may be extended to flights from Europe soon. This is USA Radio News.
Howdy, folks. Colonel Sanders here to announce that KFC's new spicy, crispy Zinger chicken sandwich is now available in a $5 fill-up for a limited time. Why? Because who wants to spend $7 on a meal at a burger place when you could spend $5 on a hand-breaded Zinger chicken sandwich, wages, a cookie, and a drink at KFC? I mean, we specialize in chicken. You need another reason? I didn't think so. Try the Zinger and a $5 fill-up at KFC today. KFC, it's finger-licking good. Limited time offer at participating KFCs. Tax extra.
Two passenger jets clip wings at New York's LaGuardia Airport this morning. The FAA says a WestJet Airlines plane and a Republic plane were involved, and both were on taxiway B at about 8:30 when they made contact. Fortunately, no reports of injuries, and the FAA is already investigating. Authorities in St. Louis County say about a dozen students aboard a school bus are injured and their bus driver was trapped after a crash on eastbound I-44 this morning. Police say the bus went down an embankment in Kirkwood at about 8 a.m., and the Missouri Highway Patrol says every child on the bus received some minor injuries. A lawsuit filed against a town in South New Jersey is claiming anti-Jewish bias, as we hear from Sarah Lee Kessler.
A religious group, Agudath Israel, says Jackson's restrictions on school construction targets the area's growing Orthodox Jewish community. In March, the Jackson Town Council barred the building of dorms operated by schools and religious orders. Agudath Israel and the developers say the town is trying to prevent Orthodox Jews from moving in from Lakewood. They claim the town's new rule is anti-Semitic. Town officials aren't commenting. Sarah Lee Kessler, New Jersey.
And the Vermont legislature sent a bill to the Governor Phil Scott to allow residents to have small amounts of marijuana for recreational use. No word on whether he's going to sign it. Find us online at usaradio.com. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
At Crown Trophy of Flemington, we have thousands of products for you to choose from. Whether you're looking for trophies, plaques, or corporate awards, Crown Trophy of Flemington is your one-stop shop. We feature acrylic and crystal awards and promotional products for any occasion. We build and engrave all awards right on site, and we're a leading supplier of varsity jackets for local sports teams. We provide quality customer service and great pricing. Crown Trophy of Flemington is conveniently located in the Staples Shopping Center in Flemington. Crown Trophy of Flemington, we're trophies and a whole lot more.
On today's program, I'll be talking about how the Turpok fire should serve as a reminder to small businesses on the need of a disaster recovery plan. I'll have six ways you can improve customer engagement, how to make a big splash at trade shows, I'll have four habits to building a financially healthy business, and how backlinks can help your SEO. It's Thursday, May 11th, 2017, and I'll have all that and more right now on Taking Care of Business.
And I've been taking care of business.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Jim Gano, and this program is called Taking Care of Business. And for the next hour, we're going to talk about issues affecting businesses large and small here in the borough of Flemington in beautiful Hunterdon County, New Jersey, and on the national scene as well. But before we do, we get started with a brief check of the weather. It's currently 58 degrees at 12:06. The forecast shows that for today, it'll be sunny with increasing clouds later and a high of 65 with a low of 46. For tomorrow, it'll be breezy and cooler with rain throughout the day, which will be heavy at times, flooding possible in low-lying areas, a high of 53 degrees and a low of 46. Saturday, it'll be partly cloudy with a few showers around, a high of 66 and a low of 42. And for Sunday, Mother's Day, partly sunny with a high of 68 and a low of 49. And a current check of the financial market shows the Dow is currently down 82.76 to 20,860.35. The NASDAQ down 34.97 to 6,094.39. S&P 500 down 12.51 to 2,387.12. Oil is up 79 cents to $48.12 per barrel. Gold up $4.90 to $1,223.80 an ounce. Want to say hello to Phil, Kevin, and Gary, and Ron Van Horn listening in. Now switch over to www.huntertonchamberradio.com to catch the rest of the show. Well, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Jim Gano, and the program is called Taking Care of Business. That's exactly what we're going to be doing this week, taking care of business, yours, mine, ours. But before we do, of course, we want to remind you, a lot of folks watching in on the Facebook page today, so glad that they could join us. And we're trying to get more likes on Facebook, more followers on Facebook. So if you're online and you're listening to the program right now, open up another tab, go to Facebook, and then like and follow the program. The page you're looking for is Taking Care of Business with Jim Gano. And like I said, just like that, follow that page. You'll get updates weekly. A lot of people appreciated last week with the Turpok fire how I was notified right away. My business is right across the street, so I was notified right away. I put out a breaking news update, and that's how a lot of people found out that Turpok was having a devastating fire. We're going to have more on that and the disaster recovery plan story at around 12:15. At this time, we always start the program with what I call the business quote of the week. It's a new feature to the program called the business quote of the week. And this week's quote doesn't come from a big business icon. Instead, it comes from legendary Green Bay Packer coach Vince Lombardi. Lombardi said, "The quality of a person's life is in direct proportion to their commitment to excellence, regardless of their chosen field of endeavor." So what about you? Do you have that commitment to excellence? And what does that mean to you? Is it to do what is expected of you and no more? Or is it to do not only what's expected, but to go that extra mile and do chip in a little extra? There's another quote, and I'll probably use this in a future show, but I love this always kind of, when I get an employee who's kind of like stuck in a rut, I'll often remind them of this quote where it says, "Remember, the difference between ordinary and extraordinary is that little extra." And so the question that I would obviously ask of everybody is, are you willing to give that little extra? Are you willing to do more than the guy sitting in the desk across from you, next to you? Are you willing to do more than your competition? And very often, when I pose that question to people, I get some very varied answers. And not many people are willing to do that. They're in what I call the comfort zone. And as a result, that's when they start to wonder, well, why is my business stagnating? Why aren't we growing? Why can't I get more customers? And a lot of times, it's in direct proportion to the amount of effort that you're willing to put in. So hopefully, listening to Lombardi, and I like how a lot of times coaching and what famous coaches have said, like John Wooden and Woody Hayes and Bobby Knight and Vince Lombardi, it's amazing how many times the athletic analogies work so well in business. And a lot of times your staff doesn't always see it that way until it's mentioned to them, and then all of a sudden it starts to click. So like I said, after the 12:15 break, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about the Turpok fire and the need for a disaster recovery plan. That's the big story of the day. We did cover this a few weeks ago on the program, but again, I think now more than ever, it becomes all the more real and all the more apparent on why disaster recovery is so important in small business. But for now, what I want to talk about is how can you make a big splash at trade shows with your business? Now, trade shows are a great place to network with new clients, meet potential partners, and check out what the competition is up to. Often a trade show is as simple as a large ballroom in a hotel with a row of booths, but some can be more elaborate. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, for instance, also does their annual business expo, usually in October or November. And it's a great time for people to come in and see about 130, 140 different businesses from Hunterdon County all under one roof. And very rarely will you have the opportunity to talk to that many businesses at one time. So, again, you want to, once we announce the dates of that, you're going to want to circle your calendar and make a point of visiting the expo just so that you can visit all the businesses. But trade shows, a lot of times, whether it's industry-specific or if it's kind of broad and generic, they're a good way for you to showcase your business. But before you sign up to attend a trade show, you should kind of research what you're getting yourself into. And there's a couple of questions that you should first ask to determine which show is right for your business. Now, the first is, will your ideal audience be in attendance? Will you ever get a list of attendees after the show so that you can do follow-ups? Can your business be named in the program? Are there extra opportunities to sponsor the event or some portion of the event, sometimes a breakfast or luncheon or something like that, that would highlight your business? What other events are taking place around the main show that your customers or you might have an interest in? And how many attendees have they had in the past? Is this the first time they're doing the show, the 20th time they're doing the show? But if they can kind of gauge and tell you, hey, you know, we rent out the Garden State Exhibit Center, for instance, down in Edison, and we average about 50,000 people coming through the turnstiles every day. Well, then you know that's going to get you some great exposure. Now let's talk about your booth. Now, if you're headed, say, to a home show or a bridal show, the booths can range from very simple signage on a table to very extravagant structures. So you have to determine what makes the most sense for your business. Now, if your customers don't expect a contractor to have more than some before and after imagery, then a large booth is unnecessary. On the other hand, if you have a luxury brand, you may need to invest in a good booth that can be used on a regular basis. There are a number of companies that create these booths that can help guide you through the design. If your signage will change on a regular basis, then take advantage of the retractable banners that can have the mesh replaced without paying for a new stand. What should you include on your banner or stand? Obviously, you want high-resolution images. There's nothing worse to me than seeing somebody at a trade show, and they've spent hundreds of dollars to rent a booth, and then they have very poor quality imagery in their presentation. It's generally not their fault. You know, they may be great home builders and not great marketers, but if they just took the time to hire a photographer to go out and do some before and after pictures, or used a camera and not an iPhone and brought high-res imagery to the sign shop, then it would look so much better. Obviously, your business logo and name, address, phone number, website should be included, and some limited text, maybe some bullet points about what you specialize in. Obviously, portability is the name of the game when it comes to booths. If you're lugging all the equipment in yourself, sometimes it's great to mail or ship your booth to the venue ahead of time. Make sure you get instructions from the event organizers as far as how it should be shipped, when it should arrive, and who will receive it, so that it will be at your designated area when you get there. You also want to be sure to factor in the extra expense of shipping and the hotel's holding and distribution fees. Most signage and booth companies package their products with rolling bags for easy packing. Let's talk about some swag for a minute. Now, yeah, believe it or not, you need to bring something to hand out at your booth at these events. Potential clients are inundated with information and they can't possibly remember everyone they meet. Handing them something as simple as your business card or a brochure can suffice, but often you can attract customers to your booth for a conversation by giving them freebies or promotional items emblazoned with your company logo and contact information. Not only do these gifts make potential clients feel like they're getting something, but it can also open up the opportunity for a conversation about you and your product. It's important that they walk away with a good impression of your company, and the best way to do this is by interacting with you. So put on your best winning smile and start shaking hands and kissing babies. Now, a note about promotional items. We sell them at Crown Trophy of Flemington. We sell the trade show booths. We sell the pop-up banners. But when it comes to promotional items, the one thing I often tell people, and sometimes I probably talk myself out of more sales than I make, is make the product useful. Something that will end up in their purse, in their pocket, on their desk, where they'll see it often. Not something like a stress ball that they're going to go home, give to their kids, and the kids will lose it, the batteries will run out, or it'll end up in the junk drawer. Now, when you're talking about trade shows, you also have to watch for extra fees. Now, here's a word of caution, because if you need things like electricity, lighting, cords, Wi-Fi, or someone to bring in your boxes, you're going to be charged for it. It is the nature of these events. Now, there are labor fees and equipment rental fees, so factor those into your event budget when you're planning. They are usually listed in the contract you sign, and you often need to reserve these items in advance. If you plan to serve food, be sure that the event coordinators check with the event complex to avoid a conflict with any on-site food service vendors. You also may include a sign-up sheet or business card fishbowl at your booth to capture all of your new potential leads and keep track of those that you've talked to. Most trade shows will give you a list of attendees after the show that you can add to your contacts list. Make sure you follow up with a personal note to any potential customers that you've talked to. During the show, they may be overwhelmed by all of the attention and the conversations they've had, but a quick follow-up note will remind them of your conversation, so be sure to add these contacts to your regular email newsletter as well. Contacts are the number one benefit of attending a trade show, so don't neglect them after you pack up. So here's a quick checklist. You're going to first want to find the right show for your audience, bring your booth, stock up on your swag, budget for any extras that you may incur, and when you're there, network, 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 and of course, and probably most importantly of all, follow up with a personalized email or handwritten note sent via USPS that lets them know that you appreciate their time, thanking them for coming to your booth, and a chance to offer two or three more bullet points about why doing business with you is such a great idea. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the disaster recovery plan and the Turpok fire. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Ready to start your child's entrepreneurial adventure? Join us for this exclusive entrepreneurial learning event featuring the award-winning game Launch. Limited to just 40 kids in the 4th through 8th grade. Friday, May 12th from 6 to 9 at the Deer Path YMCA, Woods Church Road in Flemington. Register online at HuntertonChamber.org.
3, 2, 1. Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-9000. 1-800-273-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Come join us for the 4th Annual Hunterdon County Community Day on Saturday, June 3rd from 11 to 4 at the County Fairgrounds, South County Park, and Ringo's. There'll be food, there'll be music, there'll be games, fun for the whole family, pony rides and a petting zoo, reptile shows by Michael Schwedick, outdoor games and activities, a shred event sponsored by the Hunterdon County Clerk from 11 to 3, tethered balloon rides by Unity Bank. The 4th Annual Hunterdon County Community Day on Saturday, June 3rd, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the Board of Chosen Freeholders of Hunterdon County, Hunterdon Healthcare, Unity Bank, Jersey Mike's and Subs. For all the great details and information, visit HunterdonChamber.org or give us a call at 908-782-7115. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And I've been taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. I've been taking care of business. It's all mine. Taking care of business and working overtime. Work out.
You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HunterdonChamberRadio.com. I'm your host, Jim Gano, with you every week at this time, and very appreciative and glad that you can join us every week for issues affecting businesses, large and small. And this is one issue that we're about to talk about that can affect any business at any time, and probably one that keeps most business owners up at night. Last Wednesday night, here in Flemington, New Jersey, local institution, local business, suffered a devastating fire, and that came at Turpok Cleaners on Rayville Avenue here in the borough of Flemington. And almost before the flames were extinguished, people were already on social media trying to start GoFundMe pages, seeking donations. Fortunately, the Andrew Turpok, is fully insured, and he has other locations. But in the event of a catastrophe at your business, how fast can you be back up and running? Now, earlier this month, a monkey caused a nationwide power outage in Kenya. Millions of homes and businesses were without electricity, which just goes to show that not all disasters come in the form of major storms with names and categories, says Bob Davis, who's the CMO of Atlantis Computing. Electrical fires, broken water pipes, failed air conditioning units, and some rogue monkeys can cause just as much damage, he says. And while business executives might think they're safe based on their geographic location, it's important to remember that day-to-day threats can destroy data and ruin a business. That's why it's critical for all businesses to have a disaster recovery plan. When we think of DRs or disaster recoveries, a lot of times the first thing you think about is your computers, and that's important. But there's a lot that goes into disaster recovery. You have to think about your inventory and how fast you can replenish that. You have to think about physical workspace. Right now, Turpok, the building is uninhabitable. It's going to take months before they can rebuild. So luckily he has other locations, but if he didn't, where would they open? Where would they go? We know that in my business, Crown Trophy, and I've already run a disaster recovery drill with vendors, I can get a new engraving machine within 2 days. I can get all the inventory I need within a day. You have to also be able to communicate with your employees and make sure they're aware of what's going on and what the next steps are. And some of their responsibilities will shift from operational to now communicative. They've got to be able to help talk to customers and let them know what the plan is. And number two, and probably one of the more important points, is you have to communicate with your customers and let them know what's going on. Andrew Turpok did a great job of that, using social media to connect with as many people as possible, and within a few days was already contacting people directly about any claims that they might have. So not all disaster recovery plans are created equal. So to ensure that your systems, your data, your personnel are protected and your business can continue to operate in the event of an actual emergency or disaster, there's a couple of guidelines that you can follow to create this plan that will help you quickly recover. Now, when I talk about creating the plan, this is not done in 10 minutes. This is going to take you a couple hours, and you may want to do it over a period of weeks or months, but try to start thinking about these points and who's responsible for what. The first of which would be inventory any hardware and software. Your disaster recovery plan should include a complete inventory of any hardware and applications in priority order, says Usama El Halali, who's the Vice President of Products for ArcServe. Each application and piece of hardware should have the vendor technical support contract information and contact numbers so you can get back up and running quickly. I keep all of this information in a notebook. It's about a 1-inch thick binder, has all of my vendors, their phone numbers, their contact names, my account numbers, what my terms are with these people, computers, etc. I have serial numbers so that I can call the computer company and say, I need another computer just like this one, maybe upgraded. And I keep that at home, and I keep a copy of that on two zip drives that I then have, one in my bank and one also offsite at home, and one in my briefcase. So this way, if something goes wrong, I plug it into my laptop, the disaster recovery plan goes into action. You also have to, number two, define your tolerance for any downtime and any data loss. This is the starting point of your planning, says Tim Singleton, who's the president of Strive Technology Consulting. So if you're a plumber, you can probably be in business without servers or technology for a while, but if you're eBay, you can't be down for more than a few seconds. So figuring out where you are in this spectrum will determine what type of solution you will need to recover from a disaster. You have to evaluate what an acceptable recovery point objective is and a recovery time objective is for each set of applications, says David Grimes, who's the CTO of Navisite. So recovery point and recovery time is pretty much, it's kind of the same thing in that there's a timeline when you want to be back up and running and fully functional. In an ideal situation, every application would have an RPO or RTO or just a few milliseconds, and that's often neither technically nor financially feasible. By properly identifying these two metrics, businesses can prioritize what is needed to successfully survive a disaster, ensure a cost-effective level of disaster recovery, and lower the potential risk of miscalculating what they're able to recover during a disaster. When putting your disaster recovery plan in writing, divide your application into three tiers, says Robert DeLossi, who's the Senior Director of Testing and Crisis Management at SunGuard Availability Services. Tier 1 should include the applications you need immediately. These are the mission-critical apps you can't do business without. Tier 2 covers any applications you need within 8 to 10 hours, even up to 24 hours. They're essential, but you don't need them right away. And Tier 3 can be comfortably recovered within a few days, he explains. Digital transformation makes data management the top priority. As organizations become increasingly digitally driven, there's an urgent need to get to grips with data management. Defining which apps are most important will aid the speed and success of the recovery. But most important is testing the plan at least twice per year, he says. The tiers might change based on the results, which could reveal unknown gaps to fill before there's a true disaster. Obviously, there we're talking about all your computer systems, but in everything you do, so tier 1, tier 2, tier 3, how important is it for you to have inventory back on shelves ready to ship, or to, you know, the raw materials needed to build whatever component you might build for a customer? For us, let's say we're a trophy store, so we're in baseball season. How fast can I get baseball figures? How fast can I get columns? How fast can I get a saw to cut those columns? How fast can I get the wrenches that I'm going to need, the hardware that I'm going to need to put all this together? And then how fast can I get a computer and an engraving machine at some location where we can start engraving the plates? I've already tested this out, and I can be back up and running within 24 to 48 hours. So I'm comfortable with that. The next part would be the communication with employees and customers. You also have to lay out who's responsible for what and identify backup personnel. All disaster recovery plans should clearly define the key roles, responsibilities, and the parties involved during a DR event, says Will Chin, who's the Director of Cloud Services at Computer Design and Integration. Now, among these responsibilities must be the decision to declare the disaster. Having clearly identified roles will garner a universal understanding of what tasks need to be completed and by whom, and at what time frame. This is especially critical when working with third-party vendors or providers. All parties involved need to be aware of each other's responsibilities in order to ensure that the disaster recovery process operates as efficiently as possible. We're going to step away and take a break right now. When we come back, we'll have the rest of why a disaster recovery plan is so important. when running a business. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
You've got the Democratic leader calling for the guy's dismissal like 3 or 4 weeks before. I don't remember that in Watergate. I don't remember the Democratic leader calling for Archibald Cox to be dismissed.
Senator Lindsey Graham slamming Democrats for their hypocrisy over the firing of James Comey. Comey's acting replacement, Andrew McCabe, testifying in front of a Senate hearing this morning. President Trump is talking about his meeting yesterday with the foreign minister of Russia. He said the two discussed Syria.
I think that we're going to do very well with respect to Syria. I think things are happening that are really, really, really positive. We're going to stop the killing and the death.
12 children injured after their school bus went off a St. Louis area highway and into a ravine. Authorities say the accident occurred this morning when the driver swerved to avoid a crash. One child ejected from the bus having serious injuries. The other injuries reported as minor. USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Wayne Allyn Root. I was one of the biggest critics of Obama in the national media. Suddenly, I was under massive IRS attack. So I hired Sam Landis. Sam did an amazing job. We won twice. I didn't owe a penny. Thank you, Sam Landis. Many of you have IRS problems, and you've spent thousands with non-lawyer tax resolution firms. Do yourself a favor. Call Sam Landis for a free consultation. Trust me, Sam Landis is the best. Sam saved my life. Call Sam at 800-WE-HELP-YOU with the letter U. That's toll-free, 800-WE-HELP-YOU with the letter U. 800-WE-HELP-YOU.
Hi, I'm Wayne Allyn Root for pre1933.com. I've been the single biggest BBB, backer, believer, and buyer of gold for over 15 years. But now I found a better way to buy gold. I found the Uber of gold. This company, pre1933.com, will forever change the way gold is sold. Pre1933.com is a wholesaler of pre-1933 gold. They have no salesman, zero commission, prices no one can compete with. Call 855-PRE-1933. That's toll-free, 855-773-1933, or go to pre1933.com.
And I've been taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every week. I've been taking care of business. It's all mine. Taking care of business and working overtime. Work out.
You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com. So glad you could join me. My name is Jim Gano, the owner of Crown Trophy here in Flemington and the host of this program, as I have been for the last 5.5 years. Before we get going with the rest of the show, time to take a brief look at the weather. It's currently 58 degrees, and for the weekend, it looks like we're going to have tomorrow some sun with increasing clouds later in the day. And a high of 65 and a low of 46. For tomorrow, it'll be breezy and cooler with rain, which will be heavy at times, flooding possible in some areas, a high of 53 degrees and a low of 46. For Saturday, it'll be partly cloudy with a few showers around with a high of 66 and a low of 42. And for Sunday, Mother's Day, it'll be partly sunny with a high of 68 and a low of 49 degrees. Before we went on the break, we were talking about the Turpok fire and why it's important for businesses to have a disaster recovery plan. We talked about laying out who's responsible for what, determining tiers, T-I-E-R-S, not T-E-A-R-S, of importance for what mission or what part of the disaster recovery is so important, inventorying the hardware, and defining your tolerance for downtime. You should also have a plan for your entire staff, from C-level executives all the way down, and make sure they understand the process and how their role fits into it. And what would be expected of them, says Neely Loring, who's the president of Matrix, which provides cloud-based solutions, including disaster recovery as a service. This gets everyone back on their feet quicker. Protocols for a disaster recovery plan must include who and how to contact the appropriate individuals on the DR team, and in what order, to get systems up and running as soon as possible, adds Kevin Westkirchner, who's the vice president of operations at Through. It's critical to have a list of the DR personnel with the details of their position, their responsibilities, and their emergency contact information. One final consideration is to have a succession plan in place with a trained backup employee in case a key staff member is on vacation or in place where, or in a place where they cannot get to do their part or leaves the company, said Brian Ferguson, who is the product marketing manager of Digium. You also want to create a communication plan. Perhaps one of the more overlooked components of a disaster recovery plan is having a good communication plan, says Mike Gennardi, who's a solutions architect at Computer Design and Integration. In the event of a disaster strikes, how are you going to communicate with your employees? Do your employees know how to access the systems they need to perform their job duties during a DR event? How will you communicate with customers? Many times the main communication platforms, phone and email, may be affected, and alternative methods of contacting your employees will be needed. A good communications plan will account for initial communications at the onset of a disaster, as well as ongoing updates to keep staff informed throughout the event. Communication is critical when responding to and recovering from any emergency, crisis event, or disaster, says Scott Smith, who is the Chief Commercial Officer at ModusLink. So having a clear communication strategy is essential. Cell phone numbers, email addresses, everything. Effective and reliable methods for communicating with employees, vendors, suppliers, and customers in a timely manner are necessary beyond initial notification of an emergency. Having a written process in place to reference ensures efficient action post-disaster and alignment between organizations, employees, and partners. A disaster recovery plan should also include a statement that can be published on your company's website and social media platforms in the event of an emergency, adds Robert Gibbons, who's the Chief Technical Officer at Datto, a data protection platform, and be prepared to give your customers timely status updates on what they can expect from your business and when. If your customers understand that and they are aware of the situation, you are adequately prepared and working to take care of it in a timely manner, they will feel much better. Number five, let employees know where to go in case of an emergency and have a backup worksite. Many firms think that a DR plan is just for their technology systems, but they fail to realize that people, meaning their employees, also need to have a plan in place, says Asun Salim, who's the president of Simple Grid Technology. Have an alternate site in mind if your primary office is not available. Ensure that your staff knows where to go, where to sit, and how to access the systems from that site. Provide a map to the alternate site and make sure you have seating assignments there. In the event of a disaster, your team will need an operational place to work with the right equipment, space, and communication, says DeLossi, and that might mean teleworking and other alternative strategies need to be devised in a case a regional disaster causes power outages across large geographies. So be sure to note any compliance requirements and contract dedicated workspace where staff and data can remain private. And don't contract 50 seats if you'll need 200 to truly meet your recovery requirements. Number six, make sure your service level agreements include disasters and emergencies. If you have outsourced your technology to an IT firm or store your systems in a data center co-location facility, make sure you have a binding agreement with them that defines their level of service in the event of a disaster. This will help ensure that they start working on resolving your problem within a short period of time. Some agreements can even discuss the time frames in getting systems back up and running, said Salim. Number seven, include how to handle sensitive information. Defining operational and technical procedures to ensure the protection of sensitive information is a critical component of a DR plan, says Eric Dietrich, who's the partner of Sonera. These procedures should address how sensitive information will be maintained and accessed when a DR plan has been activated. And finally, test your plan regularly. If you're not testing your DR process, you basically don't have one, said Singleton. Your backup hardware may have failed. Your supply chain may rely on someone incapable of dealing with disaster. Your internet connection may be too slow to restore your data in the expected amount of time. The DR key employee may have changed his or her cell phone number. There are a lot of things that may break up a perfect plan. The only way to find that is to test it when you can afford to fail. Your plan must include details on how your DR environment will be tested, including the method and frequency of tests, says Dave LeClaire, who's the Vice President of Product Marketing of Unitrends, a cloud-based IT disaster recovery and continuity solution provider. A recent continuity survey of 900 IT admins discovered less than 40% of companies test their DR more frequently than once per year, and 36% don't even test them at all. Infrequent testing will likely result in DR environments that do not perform as required during a disaster, thus causing delays. Your plan should define recovery time objective and recovery point objective goals per workload and validate that they can be met. Fortunately, recovery assurance technology now exists that is able to automate DR testing without disrupting production systems and can certify RTO and RPO targets are being met for 100% confidence in disaster recovery, even for complex N-tier applications. It's also a good idea to do backup off-site. When they talk about a regional disaster like a Hurricane Sandy where power was knocked out on a large area, backing up off-site in Ohio, in Idaho, there's storage places all over the country, or in multiple sites, will allow you to access that information quicker. Also, keep in mind that when it comes to disaster recovery, you're only as good as your last test. says Loring. A testing schedule is the single most important part of any DR plan. Compare your defined RTO and RPO metrics against tested results to determine the efficacy of your plan. The more comprehensive the testing, the more successful a company will be in getting back on their feet. Now, we test our generators weekly to ensure their functions. Always remember that failing a test is not a bad thing. It is better to find these problems early than to find them during the crisis. Decide what needs to be modified and then test until you're successful. And don't forget about testing your employees. The employees that are involved need to be well-versed in the plan and be able to perform every task they are assigned without issue, said Ferguson. Running simulated disasters and drills helps ensure that your staff can execute the plan when an actual event occurs. So again, it's great that the community is rallying around Turpok cleaners. Great that there's people that are out there trying to find prom dresses for all the girls who lost dresses that still needed some alterations. And this is a great town to live in for just those reasons. Now, in your business, what does your disaster recovery plan look like? Or are you just going to wing it, you know, should a disaster happen? You've got to be able to communicate with your customers, communicate with your employees, communicate with your vendors, and then let people know along the way what the steps are being taken so that you can get back up and running as quickly as possible. All right, it's currently 12:40, and next up, six ways that you can improve your customer engagement. Business owners and consultants give their take on how business owners can make customer engagement a key to their business success all the time. But let's face it, customers are busy. And while you're thinking about them all the time, they aren't thinking about your business every minute of the day. That's why customer engagement is so important. If you want your customers to come back again and again, you may want to have a relationship with them. When you are in a business, it helps to have that personal touch. And as you've probably noticed, companies tend to get creamed on social media when they forget that and they treat their customers like a number instead of a name. Do you feel like your company is falling short in customer engagement? So if so, let's consider these tips that can help you remind your customers there are actually people behind your business. The first is to practice customer engagement by actually staying in touch. So staying in touch with your customers is important to customer engagement, says Azima Hartsock, who's the president and co-founder of Phone to Action, a website that helps organizations connect their supporters to elected officials. If a couple of months go by after the sale and the customer does not know how to use a product, then the return of investment for that client is zero, she says, and that customer may remember that the next time they need your business and go elsewhere. Companies must realize that the sales cycle never really ends. Number two, you want to embrace negative feedback. Now, you don't have to be excited that a customer thinks your business is blah, but you probably shouldn't ignore the feedback either. Treat the customer with empathy, listen to and validate their concerns, and then take specific steps to address the issues. This sounds obvious, but few companies actually do it. Some of their most loyal customers were unsatisfied at some point, but in the process of addressing their concerns, they grew closer and became big ambassadors of our brand. The worst interaction is no interaction, says Hartsock. Number three, be charitable. Every small business needs to build into their plans and then do it all year long, a give back to their community program, says Mark Joseph, who's a CEO and president of Scottsdale, Arizona-based online wholesaler and closeout company Dollar Days International. When your customers know you're engaged with helping their community, they become more loyal and in some cases feel the obligation to give back themselves, which is a win-win for you, your customers, and your community. Dollar Days has had numerous sweepstakes for its customers where the prize winners are nonprofits. For instance, one month, Joseph's business might ask their customers to nominate an animal shelter for a $2,000 shopping spree. Last December, they asked for nominations for a lucky nonprofit to win up to 300 pairs of socks. By the time the sweepstakes are over, Joseph's clients can feel good about themselves for nominating a worthy charity and feel warm and fuzzy about Dollar Days for giving back to the community. We believe that giving back is a win for us in creating a loyal following while at the same time helping to support their causes, Joseph says. Still, you are a business and not a nonprofit, so try to make sure that any community outreach is in line with your business's skill sets. You may also want to make sure that the public has at least some awareness of what you're doing. If you owned a car wash, you'd probably want to give away free car washes to a local charity that donates cars rather than have your business anonymously send money every month to a random charity. That isn't being selfish, it's a way to help you stay in business. Fourth, offer your customers advice without charging them for it. In the old days, gas stations often gave away free air for tires. No plunking a coin in a machine, you just got the air for free. And gas station owners hoped you'd remember them when you needed to buy gas. You can take that same principle and apply it to virtually any business. Darren Slaughter runs a boutique marketing agency that solely caters to home improvement contractors. We are always looking for new clients as we provide a service to help contractors manage their online marketing, Slaughter says. He says his number one way to engage with customers and find new ones is by blogging. He has over 1,500 blog posts on his site about construction marketing that helps contractors do their own marketing. Once they run into a pickle or just don't want to bother, they contact us, Slaughter says. The conversation is always about how to help them, not what we need to do to convince them to hire us. That's what blogging does. It creates expert status, reduces sales cycles, and keeps your margins in place because people expect to pay for experts. Number five, speak up. If you love public speaking, you may love this suggestion. So talk in public. Speaking engagements are more impactful than ever, especially given the fact that we have less and less direct contact with each other, says Stephen Dubin, the president of a public relations and advertising company called PR Works. If you find an audience full of potential customers, like at a trade show, a chamber of commerce meeting, or a Lions Club, and you're a good speaker, you may be able to engage with your customers. And you want to speak your customer's language. Now, as noted, when Wood put up her blog post, it actually was aimed at dentists instead of just any business owner. If you're selling to teenagers, you probably have to market on their favorite social media haunts like Snapchat or Tumblr. When Craig Bloom, who was the founder and CEO of logo design company freelogoservices.com, decided he wanted to reach out to an international audience, he knew that he couldn't do all of his marketing in English. To bring in these new customers meant we needed a global customer acquisition strategy, and this required recruiting a strong team of translators and multilingual marketers. Now, none of this was easy, he says, and we learned that translating keywords doesn't always work, but it did. Our non-English markets now account for over 60% of our users. He says, in fact, now 35 million customers in 120 countries instead of 7 million in North America and a few other non-English speaking markets. So when we talk about how to engage with customers, how to get more customers in, you really want to feel about what I'm hoping that you're doing is creating relationships. And that is a key component to anything you do. People have to make that connection with you. If they're just a number, they can be a number anywhere. But if they're important in your business, they're going to want to return the favor to you. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com. We're going to step away for our last break. When we come back, we're going to talk about when to know if it's time to break up with a bad client. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weikert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime. And selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technologies to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
Ready to start your child's entrepreneurial adventure? Join us for this exclusive entrepreneurial learning event featuring the award-winning game Launch, limited to just 40 kids in the 4th through 8th grade. Friday, May 12th from 6 to 9 at the Deer Path YMCA, Woods Church Road in Flemington. Register online at HuntingtonChamber.org.
3, 2, 1.
2, 1.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hi, I'm Pat Smits, Law Offices of Patricia Garrity Smits, LLC. The Hunterdon Chamber is a great resource to find the best local business people and meet new friends.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Oh, you lucky dog, you. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Glad you could join me for another edition, and we'll be back again next week with more interesting topics affecting businesses large and small around the country and around the world. It's great to get together and talk about things that affect business and hopefully help change the way people do business in certain areas. But one area that I talk about with people a lot, and the frustration seems to mount as time goes on, is they want to fire their clients. They're tired of them. They don't pay. They are rude, things like that. And they just want to tell them to get lost. How do you do that, and is there ever a time when you should do that? Now, there are lots of reasons why a business relationship may not work out. But you can watch for those signs, and then sometimes you have to make that difficult decision to cut a customer loose. And no one wants to lose business. We put our blood, our sweat, and our tears into building a thriving company, and turning away customers seems to be as antithetical to that effort as possible, but it's not. A customer is not always right. That age-old golden rule of business has never been the true test of how well you run your company. Not all clients are a good fit for all companies. Personality conflicts, unrealistic expectations, or just plain meanness are all very good reasons that a business relationship may not work out. It's not always easy to know when it's time to sever ties with a client, but there are some telltale signs that you should consider cutting a customer loose. For instance, when communication with them creates anxiety for you and your staff, you are responsible for maintaining a happy, healthy work environment. If you have a client who continuously wreaks havoc on your team, it's a good time to direct them elsewhere. When they are rude or disrespectful, this is a non-starter for me. So if a customer can't deal with me and my team in a way that is respectful, they've got to go, period. You have no obligation to be subjected to a toxic relationship. Third, despite clear instructions of the contrary, they continue to operate outside the scope of work outlined at the onset of the project. Managing expectations is key to a smooth relationship. It's one thing to make changes to the scope of the work, and it's another to make changes and not expect to pay for it. Fourth, when they continuously question rates and services, we charge what we're worth. And if they're looking for a cheap solution, then they should look somewhere else. We only want to work with clients who value what we bring to the table. Now, there was a client who, despite many, many conversations, refused to understand the concept of no. She had champagne taste and a very cheap beer budget, but she refused to understand that changes cost money. And the more complicated something is to create, the more it costs to produce. And I kind of pride myself on being able to work with even the most difficult personalities, but it became obvious that we weren't the right place for her. For me, my peace of mind and that of my staff totally outweighed any potential profit. So I politely suggested that she might be happier with a different company. And there are ways to sever the relationship without it being contentious, which is ultimately the goal. So here are a few tips for a smooth breakup. When it's about working styles, sometimes the breakdown in communication is less a function of conflicts in personality and more to do with working styles. In this case, referring and introducing another firm is the easiest way to transition the client away from your company without creating undue animosity. When it's about personality, in the case where the client is just generally unbearable, it is obviously a more difficult problem to traverse. But if you position yourself as a problem solver for their needs, you can leave the relationship intact. By acknowledging that you are not a good fit for their project and that they might be better served with a different firm who could more effectively solve their problems, they are less likely to leave feeling rejected or angry. When it's about money, this is probably the easiest of the three situations to manage effectively. Never compromise on your worth. If the client is focused solely on the bottom line, then the value that you provide as a company is lost. So suggest alternative options, but be sure to emphasize the value that you provide to your customers and leave the door open for them to return when that value is foremost in their minds. When you follow up with your brand promise, a culture will emerge that aligns with your brand and tells not only your clients, but your staff as well, what they can expect. Remember, you are on the front line. Your staff relies on you to protect them. And if you want them to stick around, make certain that you maintain a culture of mutual understanding and respect so they know you always have their back. So some great advice there on how sometimes you have to let go of certain customers. And we've done that on a couple of occasions. Wasn't very happy about it, but in the end, both my staff and I were happy that we didn't have to deal with difficult people anymore. And overall, it allowed us to be even better, to better serve our other customers. And we've grown as a result. It's currently 12:55, getting towards the end of the show, but I did want to talk about this for a minute. If you've heard about backlinks, how can they help your small business website? Well, it's simple. If you want to rank higher in search results, backlinks may be the way to boost your SEO. In some ways, the internet is like a popularity contest, a place where the number of likes and reviews you have influences the visibility of your small business's website. But that's not the whole story. Quality, not just quantity, plays a key role in increasing the likelihood that your company website will appear in a Google search. Backlinks are the prime example. These links from other websites to your site can help raise your online profile and boost your search engine optimization, especially in the site linking to yours is an authority in your field. Backlinks of Google ways of evaluating a website's overall quality. If your site doesn't have many high-quality backlinks, you're not going to rank for keywords that your customers search for. The best way to get links is to create something on your site worth linking to. This is best achieved by creating content that people will want to link because it provides so much value. Quality is key when it comes to getting other sites to link to yours, said Zach Zone, who's the Director of Marketing Operations at Foster Web Marketing. Once you have the content, it's important to make other quality sites aware of it so that they can link it to your site. You can do this by interacting with other leaders and authoritative websites on their social media pages, sending emails explaining why your recent article would be of interest to their readers, followers, and ask them to link it. Engaging with your local community by sponsoring events or donating services to nonprofits, it can lead to mentions on respected websites. And finally, finding opportunities to be a guest blogger on other important sites. So just some great things, great tips there on backlinks and how linking with other websites can do your SEO placement a world of good. In sports, the NBA playoffs continue, and in the second round of the Eastern Conference, the Cleveland Cavaliers have defeated the Toronto Raptors in four games and will play the winner of Washington versus Boston. Boston leads that series 3-2. In the West, in Houston, where are we at? Houston plays San Antonio, and the Spurs have a 3-2 advantage, and the winner of that series will play Golden State, who defeated Utah 4-0. In Major League Baseball, in the American League, the Orioles, Indians, and Astros lead their divisions, while in the National League, the Nationals, Cardinals, and Rockies lead their divisions. Just want to get one score here. Okay. And in the NHL, in the Eastern Division, second round, the Ottawa Senators have defeated the Rangers 4-2. They'll face Pittsburgh, who beat Washington 4-3 in their series. In the Western Division, Nashville defeated St. Louis 4-3 and will take on the Edmonton Oilers. The winner of the Anaheim or Edmonton Oilers Anaheim Ducks. That was Anaheim last night, so it'll be Edmonton versus Anaheim. Last minute updates coming through. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. won his first NASCAR Monster Energy Series race at Talladega in the Geico 500 with a thrilling last lap finish last week, and it was the first win for team owner Jack Roush since 2014. This week, the teams will head to Kansas Speedway for Saturday night racing under the lights for the Go Bowling 400 at 7:30 p.m. Eric Almirola's crew, who drives for Richard Petty Motorsports, will be without his crew chief, Drew Blickensdorfer, for three races after the team was penalized for rules violations after the Talladega race. Blickensdorfer was fined $65,000, the crew chief was fined $65,000. Almirola lost 35 driver points in the overall standings. want to wish a happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there this Sunday. And as always, it's been my pleasure joining you today. I always end the show with some great advice I got from my father when I was just 6 years old that guides me in my personal and professional life every day. Maybe you can use it in your lives as well when he said, never let it rest until your good is better and your better is best. If you have ideas for upcoming programming topics or guests, email me at trophyjim@yahoo.com. Or you can connect with me on LinkedIn, on Twitter at JimGano83, or on Facebook on our new page, Taking Care of Business with Jim Gano. I'm Jim Gano, and I'm taking care of business. Make it a productive week, everybody. And I've been taking care of business.